Well, happy Thursday, and as we mentioned before the microphones opened here, fall is in the air. Fall and football and all kinds of changes are coming our way as we head into a new season and also a new perspectives here on WFSU. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for tuning our way on the radio. We're also available to you via phone and email if you ever have a question or comment as you join our weekly conversation at 850-414-1234. That's the regular telephone number if you're old-fashioned. I don't want to call it old-fashioned. That seems like a pejorative. If you want to be a seasoned communicator, how does that sound, guys?
Fantastic.
Yeah, you got one of those point-to-point wired phone thingies here, 800-926-8809 if it's long distance. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email, or you can send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. I don't think we have an Instagram channel yet or Snapchat. We'll work on that. Eventually, we'll add to all of our communication devices here. Well, we ask at the outset, what makes a community a good place to live? And that's a great question because there are just about as many answers as there are people who would live in those communities. But we all know examples of cities that are, for example, fantastic for young dynamic professionals or maybe retired folks. I'm thinking like the Villages in Central Florida or growing families. We all know towns that are amenable for that. But they may not be so great for other people who don't fit into those specific categories. So how can communities accommodate more of those categories? And that would seem like maybe a really tough challenge, if not impossible. But perhaps there is a way. So we're going to talk about that way this morning on Perspectives. The concept is called 880. It's also the name of a nonprofit organization that is advancing that concept and is being hosted in Tallahassee this week by the Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency. So fascinating discussion. Let's go around and meet some folks here, many of whom you probably already know, like Christick Henry, manager of real estate for Kingdom First Realty, longtime neighborhood advocate in Leon County in Tallahassee, former Kona president, a whole bunch of other stuff, and no stranger to this room. Hey, Christy, good to see you.
Hey, Tom, good to see you.
All righty. We also say hi to Ben Pingree, director of place for the city of Tallahassee and Leon County. Good to see you, Ben.
Great to be back. Thank you.
It is indeed. And another person who comes in from time to time, Cynthia Solomon Barber, assistant city manager for community engagement and public safety with the city of Tallahassee. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Let's see, from North American Properties, Lindsay McGraw. Good to see you, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me.
One of our busiest people here. Boy, you're on top of everything from Collegetown to the Cascades development, all those places.
Very, very busy. And we're very close to closing on our Cascades project, and you'll see us going up out of the ground soon. So very glad to be here. Thank you.
Very exciting stuff. But all of this is kind of focused on the 880, and that is why from the first of this month through tomorrow, we get to say hi to Gil Guillermo Penalosa, Transformer of Communities with 880 Cities, a nonprofit urban planning organization based in Toronto, Canada, and of course visiting Tallahassee this week. Gil, it is so great to see you, and welcome to our fair city.
Thank you.
So talk about 880. What is the whole concept there?
Well, 880 Cities is a simple but powerful concept. What if everything that we did in Tallahassee, everything, the sidewalk, the crosswalk, the school, the libraries, the business, the theaters, the restaurants, everything had to be great for an 8-year-old and for an 80-year-old. It's not 8 to 80, it's 8 and 80 as an indicator species. Because the reality is that if it's good for an 8 and it's good for an 80, it's going to be good for everybody from 0 to over 100 years old. We need to stop building cities as if everybody was 30-year-old and athletic and build a great Tallahassee for everyone.
Oh, but I can just hear the pushback going on right now in my headphones, even though folks they're starting to jump in. We'll get to them in a sec. But, okay, what about that young professional, 35-year-old dynamic and all that? And, gosh, okay, it's great for little kids. It's great for older folks. What about me?
Well, the beauty of this is that if it's nice for an 80-year-old, it's going to be nice for everybody. If it's nice for the 8, it's going to be nice for everybody. On the other hand, if it's nice for a 30-year-old, it might not be nice for children. It might not be nice for older adults. The reality is that over the last 80 years, we have been building cities more thinking on car mobility than on people's happiness. And we need to do things in a different way. The reality is that, for example, people walking are being killed by people driving all the time across across the world, but specifically in Florida. Florida has the highest pedestrians and cyclists killed per capita of any other state in the U.S. It doesn't make any sense. So maybe Tallahassee should say, well, we don't care what Florida's doing, but Tallahassee is going to be the safest city in the U.S. There is absolutely no reason why Tallahassee should not be as safe or safer than Boulder, Colorado, or than Portland, Oregon, or than any other city. I mean, you have so many magnificent assets. Even just having one out of three residents are university students. So in every way, we are living longer. So we also need a city that is safe and enjoyable for the older adults. And that is something that is really, really important. The life expectancy in Florida, if we had been born in the U.S. 150 years ago, which is nothing. We've been around for 200,000 years. So if we had been born 150 years ago, the life expectancy was 39. Today is more than double. So we double the life expectancy. So we're living longer. So when people say, oh, we have a lot of old people, first, that's not a negative thing. It can be very, very positive. Second, it's not just Tallahassee. It's everywhere. For example, I think the biggest waste of resource that we have in Tallahassee and everywhere are the older adults. People retire and we cross them out as if they had died, except that they got 20, 30, 40 years left. And they are healthier and wealthier and more active, and they have knowledge and they have experience, and they could be magnificent assets to our community. They could be teaching English to the immigrants. They could be tutoring kids in the schools. They could be organizing activities for all the other older adults in the parks, walking groups, knitting groups, all kinds of our universities. The magnificent university in Tallahassee, maybe 20% of the courses should be for older adults. Older adults are hungry of knowledge. They want to learn about music and history and science and so on. So it's about doing things different. It's not about not doing a city that is nice for the millennials. It's doing a great city for millennials, but also for the children of the millennials, for the parents and grandparents of the millennials. It's about doing a city for everyone.
That's a terrific concept. Let's go around the table and see how we're doing so far here. And Krista Kenry, let's talk about the neighborhoods here. And Tallahassee being, as Gil had already said, kind of mid-30-centric, because we and Gainesville keep flipping back and forth, being the youngest cities in Florida. So we're already kind of good in that area of, you know, somewhere between 25 and 50, maybe. We're doing pretty good there. But what about neighborhoods here? How can they take this concept and run with it?
Well, I think that as he describes it, is kind of the maturation of the concept of asset-based community development. And it basically takes into account existing citizens, existing residents, existing assets, and it pulls them into the process of acclimating spaces for use of existing citizenship, as opposed to the market-driven kind of concepts that have been plugged in where we go somewhere, we find something that looks great and seems like it can work here, and we bring that. And so this is kind of giving that mode of age, 8-year-old, 80 years old. Neighborhoods are basically composed of people. They're composed of people that have spaces in their area that they use for a purpose, but that purpose may not be realized in its planning or its development and its appropriation of resources to really make that space into the use that the citizens have already claimed it for use. And the great thing about a city like Tallahassee is it is a county of neighborhoods. We have over 2,400 neighborhood plats in our system. We have over 400 recognized neighborhoods that have been organized or are in some process of latency. This is neighborhood city here, very similar to New Orleans in its concepts of having that intergenerational flavor. And we need to use a concept like that to really make that and make our city more distinguished. We're not New York. We're not Orlando. We are a city of neighbors. And this helps us to be more intentional in enlisting our neighbors and flavoring our city and distinguishing ourselves from other cities.
Okay. And Gil mentioned something, Ben Pingree, that yes. is making us more inclusive when it comes to older folks. We have now the Choose Tallahassee initiative that's trying to bring more retirees into our community as permanent residents. Let's see, we have the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, as Gil said, to yep. advance higher education, fun education right. to older folks. So it sounds like we're kind of going in that direction already.
I think we're going in all directions. I mean, to speak to Gil's point, I really do believe that we are intentional to pick up on Christique is what it's all about, focusing on the 8-year-old and the 80-year-old. You're right. We have a tapestry of different neighborhoods all around our community, and they're vibrant and verdant and full of life. What we've been doing over the last few decades and what Blueprint really focuses on is connectivity, intentional connectivity within our community to stimulate not car-driven development, not sprawl, but on the contrary, urban infill, trails, greenways, sidewalks. Look, since 2004, based upon what was approved by the voters, we have invested in ourselves $450 million worth of projects. That's what we've done. And that's just Blueprint, which is city and county. That's not everything that the city has done. That's not everything that the county has done. They've gone above and beyond that. Over the next 5 years, we will invest another $275 million. We're going to be putting $4 million a year for the next 20 years on greenways, sidewalks, and trails. Why? Why? Because we know that when we lay that foundation, every age group and every demographic and every business, in terms of activating the businesses that we want to attract for millennials and for retirees and for everyone, everyone responds well to that kind of a foundation. And so it's completely intentional, completely by design, well orchestrated and well planned out. And honestly, I think it gives us a competitive advantage to attract the Choose Tallahassee crowd, to attract the millennial that is graduating from our preeminent and wonderful universities, and colleges, and attract young families. It's looking back 40 years, there's so much more connectivity and opportunity and economic vitality, truly, that is occurring today. And I think a lot of it, if you look at, for example, the Gaines Street corridor area, that's a $30 million investment. Okay, that's what the public did. All different kinds of policies and plans and a little bit of infrastructure. What has it done? It has stimulated $400 million and counting in private sector investment. We just had the grand opening for the Greenwise yesterday, and on we go. Hotel Indigo is going to break ground. That's the kind of connectivity and urban infill that we've been listening from Gil and his 880s team about this week, and that's exactly what we're trying to create and do it again at Cascades Park. And do it also on the South City area.
Well, I want to get into what's going on here in your world, Cynthia, and also Lindsay, as far as North American Properties is concerned. And then come back to Gil in just a moment as we continue our discussion here on the 880 Initiative, a whole new concept in community development, what we're talking about here on Perspectives. Love to hear from you, too. 850-414-1234, and we shall be right back. Hey, we are back on Perspectives, the 880 concept here. If a city is good for young folks around the age of 8 and older folks around the age of 80, it'll take care of everyone else. Kind of revolutionary in that. Perspectives, by the way, produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee, and we are available online for your viewing and listening pleasure. At times when we are not on the radio, just go to WFSU.org, click on radio, pull down the programs menu. Perspectives is among that listing there, and click on that, and the most recent program is usually up within 24 hours of when it's actually on the radio. So let's talk about here the 880 concept, and Cynthia Barber, what's happening with the city of Tallahassee right now, because your bailiwick encompasses, I would think, that whole range, right?
Yes, it absolutely does, and we're excited to hear Gil say this, and this is actually the path we're on as a city. I manage the Senior Center as well as the Parks and Recreation Neighborhood Affairs area, and we're in the planning phase for what we think will be a world-class senior center. Not one where you sit around and play bingo, unless that's what you want to do. If you want to play pickleball, very, very engaged seniors. As we know, seniors are living longer, healthier, active lives, and they want activities to us to satisfy that. So this center will be dynamic. It'll have an opportunity for athletic activity if they're interested in that, dancing. They are great line dancers. I've participated some with them. Exercise classes, you name it. And then in our youth centers, and this space is flexible space, and that gets to the point that you're talking about. In our community centers, there are times when we have a bunch of the 8-year-olds running around, but there are other times we host our seniors out of that space. The public safety campus, which you may have heard something about. This, I think, will be a great opportunity, again, to bring development to the South Side, but we see it as more than just the building. If we wanted to simply build a police station, we could build it anywhere in this community. But here's an opportunity not only to bring a facility to a space where traditionally the relationship with law enforcement and the community hasn't been that great. But you bring this space, and as opposed to just building an administrative space for the police officers and the police department, you build space like playground space. So you intentionally pull together our law enforcement community and the youth of our community, start building these proactive relationships when there's nothing wrong, nothing's going bad in the community, but build these trusting, mutually respectable relationships. Also, create some flexible space in there where you can have the neighborhoods. Again, we say the neighborhoods are very critical to any redevelopment of the community that we have. You have space where you can host neighborhood associations. You can host seniors. You can host teenagers, but actively engaging all age groups in a space with, again, our law enforcement group helps us to build the community policing philosophy that we're very much interested in. It's based on collaboration, communication, coordination, and we think this space will give us a great opportunity to do that.
So it kind of changes the concept of going down to the police station. It no longer has to be something that is a phrase of terror here.
No, absolutely not. We want to create intentional interaction on a positive level, proactive. The youth will help us design the space that we have for them. So it won't be based on me, somebody that's on the other side of 50 and 55. I won't design that space. But what do the young people in the community want in that playground space? What kind of activities the senior in the neighborhoods want? The neighborhoods will help develop the public use space. You can take commission meetings. No longer do people have to come down to commission meetings. If we choose to, the space will be flexible enough and large enough to host commission meetings and all other committee meetings that we hold typically in City Hall, which is everybody has to come down to us. Now this is going out to the community.
Well, there's also, of course, a big component of this that relies on private sector development. And Lindsay, that is your bailiwick here. So how does a development group like North American Properties, how do you guys plug into this?
Well, I'd like to go back to what Ben said. It's a lot of the public-private partnerships that drive this development. We are on our sixth project in College Town. We're very proud of the work we've done there, and we wouldn't have developed there had it not been the vision of Blueprint, the city and county, to put the infrastructure in place. And it's the same, that's basically we followed the same infrastructure to Cascades Park. That was a brownfill. It was a field. It was, you know, a terrible, and the EPA came in and through the Blueprint project, and dollars, Ben can probably speak to, I've heard between $25 and $40 million to make this a beautiful park and as well as a functioning stormwater facility. We could not, as private developers, afforded to build the park and also our development, so this opportunity was created by the community and their vision for the 18-hour downtown and the connectivity, our sidewalk enhancement plan that we have in place, that we want to improve the connectivity and also, you know, encourage more pedestrian-friendly, bike-friendly, less cars on the roads. We see urban infill as the most responsible way to develop. And so, yeah, we're excited to be continuing our work in Tallahassee.
Let's add Michael to the conversation. He has been patiently awaiting there on line one. Hey, Michael, thanks for your patience. Welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you, Tom. First off, I'd like to heartily endorse your guest's 880 initiative. I agree wholeheartedly with what he has to say. I've just come in. I'm 70 years old. I don't have a car. I've just come in from risking my life on a trip to the grocery store. I invite anybody who thinks this sound is pedestrian-friendly to walk with me one day. Let's walk along St. Augustine west of Ware Stone, where you're 6 inches from traffic that is flying, including city buses. And then let's walk down through Governor Square, where I almost never walk through there that I don't see cars blowing through the stop signs. And let's go down to an intersection and try to cross while people come flying through the right turn, whether the light's green or red, doesn't matter. And if they're swaying the crosswalk, oh, well, you're a meat pancake. And it's like, and I've lived on this side of town now for a year. I have yet to see one bit of traffic enforcement, not one little bit. My experience is, if you're elderly and you're not rich, get out of this town. Do not be here. You will not like how you're treated. We do not have affordable rents. We don't have help for people that can't afford to pay rent that I can find. I'm going to stop because you just don't want to get me going. But I will say one other thing. I don't think the people of this city want to turn our park down there into the front yard of a multi-story hotel. I really don't. And I've seen this kind of thing happen before. Game Street has been turned into a nightmare. I'm sure there's a lot of self-congratulation about Game Street. It's a nightmare. And I guess that's all I have to say, Tom. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate you sharing that. And to kind of back up one thing that Michael said as far as pedestrian unfriendliness, you do have some critical areas, particularly in that stretch that he was talking about over there on the east side along Appalachie Parkway. A young lady I saw just a couple days ago trying desperately to get across those multi-lanes of traffic, and it just wasn't enough time. She barely made it. So, let's punt back to you, Gil, if we could, Mr. Penalosa, to talk about how do you take those kinds of concerns that Michael was talking about and incorporate that into this larger kind of plan? Is there a way to do that?
Well, yes. I think first we need to, when we evaluate any community, we should evaluate how do we treat the most vulnerable citizens. And the most vulnerable are the children, the older adults, and the poor. From the point of mobility, the most vulnerable is the pedestrian, then the cyclist, then the transit user, and then the car. So those should be our priorities. Everyone in Tallahassee walks. Everybody. We walk to the car. We walk to public transit. We walk to places. Everybody's pedestrian. So we need to make walking safe. Walking and cycling is not a joke. Walking and cycling is the only individual mode of mobility for most people. Walking and cycling is the only individual mode of mobility for all children and youth. If you're under 16, the only individual mode of mobility is to walk or bike. So walking and cycling safe and enjoyable should be almost like a human right, unless you think that only the people that have the money and the age and the desire to have a car have a right to individual mobility. So the caller is totally right. We need to make it safe. This is not a technical issue. We know how to make it safe. For example, all of the residential streets should be, the maximum speed should be 20 miles an hour. When you're on an arterial, it can be 40, 50, 60. As soon as you turn into a residential, it should lower to 20. And you should design the street either with bumps or with road diets or whatever to make sure that no one can really go faster than that. Why? Because if a car hits you at 20 miles an hour, there is 5% probability of being killed. At 40 miles an hour, it's over 80%. Also, because we need to walk. There's a huge problem of physical activity in Tallahassee and in Florida in general. So we need to increase physical activity. The only way to increase physical activity as a whole is for people to walk or bike as a normal part of everyday life. We might play soccer or baseball, but once or twice a week. We might go to the gym once or twice a week. But if we want people to be active 5 or more days a week, we need to walk or bike as a normal part of everyday life. And for that, we need to have safe infrastructure, safe sidewalks and crosswalks and bikeways and all of this. And that is the test. Like when you have an intersection, would you send an 8-year-old or an 80-year-old by themselves? If you would, it's because it's safe enough. If you would not, it's because it's not. And we got to do it better. Same thing with the bikeways. If it's not safe for an 8-year-old, don't even call it a bikeway. It's nothing. It's just some painted lines. So we need to do infrastructure that is safe for everyone. We know what needs to be done. From the point of view of playing, we just heard about neighborhoods. Half of the children in Tallahassee have a park within walking distance. Half of the children do not. And it's very, very important that every child has a park within walking distance or a play area. Not only because it's fun and games and they're going to be so happy, but also it's because when children play is how children learn, by playing. They develop their muscle strength, their cognitive thinking, capacity to socialize, to develop friendship, to develop a sense of belonging. That's why it's so urgent. And this can be done in 4 years. You could easily do a map of all the neighbors and everyone in Tallahassee and see which children do not have a park within walking distance and solve it in 4 years. If you don't have a park, an area to build a park, okay, find a school. Anything that is public, the schools, the libraries, the streets, the sidewalks, whatever. So let's have a school and let's get the playground, improve the playground, make it a school park so that the playground during the school time is for the school. After school and on Saturdays and Sunday, it's open to the community. You don't have a school, think of a library. You don't have a library, think of a street. Let's keep in mind, if we look at Tallahassee from the air, one third of Tallahassee are streets. The streets are the largest public space. And the streets, public, it means that it belongs to everybody. And they can have different uses according to the time of the day of the week of the year. So I'm very encouraged because I see a lot of good things. I think that Cascade Park, the citizens need to remember that just 10 years ago, it was an empty field where no one could go. Now it is a magnificent park that is having people of all ages. That has happened. At Cascade Park, soon there are plans to do the Cold Shoot Park. The Cold Shoot Park is so critical because one out of three residents are within walking distance. The FAMU University and the FSU University, you got like 70,000 people that are within walking distance. By the way, that would be such a fantastic meeting place for both. One university is overwhelmingly black and lower income. The other one is overwhelmingly white. And clearly that is not very healthy. So in the meantime, while the universities open up a little bit more, these public places could be fantastic places where people could meet each other as equals. So I see a lot of really good things happening. I think that the college town, it's also good that people thought it was not going to be able to be successful. People said, no, in Tallahassee, everybody wants a single home in the suburbs. No, not really. You know, the people in Tallahassee that have a car as a mode of mobility are spending $1 out of $5 of their income on mobility. 1 out of 5, 20%. They could be spending only 4% if they walked or bike or took public transit. That means that the listeners, they need to work all of January, all of February, and almost half of March just to pay for mobility. If they walked or bike or took public transit, they would just need about 2 weeks of work a year to pay for mobility, and the rest, it could be for something else. So all of this, and finally, I want to say, this is not just about walking or cycling. This is about the benefits. This is not just about mobility. It's about physical health and mental and emotional health. This is about the environment, having a cleaner air, less noise. This is also about economic development. Every day, the citizens of Tallahassee should be waking up and thinking, how can we attract and retain the best people? Because all of these things that Ben was talking about, if we create a great city, it's going to be much easier to attract better professors, better students, and also better citizens. However you define better cities, it might be medical doctors or engineers or pizza makers or sound technicians. If I'm a good carpenter, I can live anywhere in the world. Where am I going to live? Wherever I have good quality of life. And it's easy to attract good people, then you're going to be able to attract good companies and you're going to get more employment and it's going to be a win-win.
Well, when you're talking about making a more walkable and easily navigable community, Krista Kenry, we have had this discussion before. Why is it so necessary in too many neighborhoods that you got to get in your car to go and get like a quart of milk?
Well, I think, first of all, mobility is cultural. I think we have to understand that some folks just going to get in their car and go get a glass, going to get a gallon of milk. I think the other thing is that we have to realize that infrastructure is as infrastructure does, and infrastructure does as the citizens need it to do. The great thing about Tallahassee is that citizens will adapt. But the cool thing about it is that now we're attracting people who are looking for multimodal for real. They're looking for real multimodal access. They're looking in communities, calling my office, and they're saying, is it close to a bus line? What's the streets look like? Where's the parks at? So people are looking at this because they're not looking at moving to a place where they have to get in a car and travel. So public safety, street access, and multimodal transportation, and being very intentional. I can't get away from that word in that, making it available and feeding the needs of the people that are here now to attract the people that are coming. And I'm going to follow it up with this. Folks are coming here this weekend for FAMU Homecoming. And I've had people come in my office getting their house ready for the people that are coming in for the homecoming. And a lot of those people are buying places here because they plan on coming back. So we're not just dealing with the people that are here. We want to plan for the needs right now because there are people that are coming home or people that are attracted to places that feel like home.
And that gets you into something, since you are kind of in charge of place, Ben Pingree.
Well, yes.
How do you retain a kind of the best of the old Tallahassee and also look at, well, gee, how can we incorporate concepts like 880 and developments like Cascades Park and Collegetown and all that into what we're becoming?
Simple answer. All roads seem to lead to the urban infill and the concepts that Gil has spoken to. Whether it's a homecoming FSU or FAMU, whether it's somebody that moved out to the northeast side or to southwest or maybe one of our surrounding counties, whether it's a CEO coming in who's thinking about relocating their business, guess what? The first place we take all of those individuals are the exact kinds of places we've been talking about here today. We take them by blueprint projects. Blueprint projects are built around safe trails, connectivity, key investments that tie together a quality of life. Yes, we take them to Cascades Park. Cascades Park, you never think of Cascades Park, and you shouldn't, by the way, as a brownfield reclamation or a wonderful stormwater facility. It is cleverly disguised as a world-class central park. But these are the places that every citizen we have found, every business leader we have found, every student that is thinking about, okay, do I go off after I've graduated to Atlanta or to Orlando or fill in the blank, or do I have an opportunity to stay here? All of these different businesses, or when most recently Proof was being recruited to leave, but decided to stay and to stay in an urban revitalizing area in the South City, there's a common denominator to all of this. People do want to be able to walk. They do want to be able to feel safe as they walk with good buffers and great amenities and a verdant community. And we have that, and we're only developing it more and more each year.
The reimagining of Tallahassee and Leon County, the 880 cities concept, what we're talking about in perspectives, give us a call. We'll be right back. Back on Perspectives, 880 Cities and Redevelopment and all that kind of thing. Before we go to Koisi, who's been hanging on the line here, Cynthia, address something that Michael had said, the caller before, when he was talking about, oh my gosh, it's so hard to navigate around if you are walking or biking in this town. It seems as though every time the city or the county has a sidewalk project, there's a lot of interest in that.
Yes, it is a big issue because we want, as Christine said, we want people to have options, and a lot of people want to be able to walk to their designation. And we're undergoing a major project right now in two traditional areas, one in the Frenchtown area and one in the Bond area, where we've actually engaged the citizens there in coming up with the priorities for those communities and developing action plans. A lot of it includes being able to walk to the parks and the amenities that are already in the community. So next week, you'll see an item on the City Commission agenda from the Bond community, where they have met for a series of months along with staff and come up with a plan to add sidewalks, connectivity from a park that exists there already to connect that to the trail. And that's really not very far in their neighborhood, but if you're trying to walk, you need a safe way to get there. I hear his concerns. We're also very concerned about that, and we've put a lot of investment in sidewalks, millions of dollars in sidewalks across this community. But in our Bond community, trying to help restore that to its historical greatness. It's on the foothills of FAMU campus. It's, in my mind, the next horizon for this community will be Southside Tallahassee. There's a lot of potential there. The connectivity between even the public safety campus where it is, the housing development from the Tallahassee Housing Authority, the work that's being done on Orange Avenue, the Bond area, I just see that being the next frontier for Tallahassee. People who are, when my friends come back, I'm with Ben. In fact, I'll miss part of homecoming this week, regrettably, but I take them to Cascades Park. Gaines Street, they're riding down Gaines Street, and they'll look up and say, where are we? I say, this is Gaines Street. You remember When we went to FAMU High, this is Gaines Street. This is Cascade Park. Those of us who grew up in Smoky Hollow, taking them to the Smoky Hollow area. So we are doing a lot of great work in Tallahassee, creating the spaces. I take my grandson to Cascade Park. I take my girlfriends. I told you we're already on the other side of 55. We go to Cascade Park. There are activities for all of us, and we know that having good walkable communities and neighborhoods and connecting those neighborhoods to other resources. So the Bond community needs to be well connected to FAMU. FAMU needs to be well connected to Orange Avenue. And we know we do that through a significant network of sidewalks and other connectivity activities. Very intentional, as Christique has said. This isn't accidental. This is very well planned for our community.
Well, you also mentioned the involvement of the folks over in Bond community, and I think that's what Kwesi wants to talk about here as far as getting more folks involved in that planning. Thank you so much for hanging on the line, Kwesi. Welcome to Perspectives.
Greetings. I just have a quick question. In short, it seems a lot of the discussion is around incorporating neighborhoods into the planning process. And I was wondering if the strategy of creating neighborhood planning units was ever on the table as a way to formalize and institutionalize neighborhood participation in planning, you know, where basically councils of residents kind of participate legally, and it actually has teeth in terms of planning what happens in the communities with the city as well as the private sector. I was wondering if that made sense to kind of democratize the planning process.
Boy, that sounds like a multimodal question here. who wants to do? Yeah, okay, Chris.
Go ahead.
Christique, go ahead.
Well, thank you for saying that. We have attended with the city of Tallahassee a number of national conventions, and this conversation about neighborhood councils is really, for lack of a better term, sexy. And basically, they have them in LA, they have them in Houston, they have them in all the bigger cities, and they serve as a component part of the planning process. And first of all, they're empowered through education to be able to perform in that way, so they understand the process, they understand land use, they understand all these different mechanisms, so that when projects like North American come through, they come through the neighborhood councils. And those neighborhood councils, they vet the situation, but once they get their seal of approval, of course, they have to have engagement from their constituent neighborhood or people in their neighborhoods. But they're very effective in these cities, and I would hope that Tallahassee is strongly looking at a model like that. We've trying to be informally functioning in that capacity through CAN and through the Council of Neighborhood Associations, but we would love to see a formalized effort like that here locally.
I think we have a pretty replete, and I'm speaking, you know, don't ever ask what PLAY stands for, but the P is for planning, so I'll lead with that. We have an extremely thorough planning component, comprehensive plan, subparts, components, et cetera. But here's the bottom line to this, and it is a sexy concept, but here's the sort of the lay of the land on major projects. And we saw it in the Frenchtown with the standard development. We see it again now in Bond. And hey, if you remember from last year, the blueprint project modification of the airport gateway, there are standards, legal standards, well constructed, that we must follow. But this is a community that time and again, and by intent and by design and with a open tent, absolutely goes above and beyond to seek out neighborhood involvement for those neighborhoods that abut or are impacted by the projects. And that, take Blueprint, for example. So you got 27 Blueprint projects in 2020. Each one of those, and it's already starting, but each one of those will include replete engagement with the various neighborhoods where that project aligns, and it should be that way. We toured Coal Chute Pond. We worked very closely with the neighborhoods surrounding that and Capital Cascades Trail and the FAMU Way Extension, including the universities, to make sure what? That we really have the highest and best engagement and the highest and best outcome from the project, one that the community will embrace because they helped build that. And planning documents is part of it, but it has to go beyond that as well. And I think that is being incorporated into the system that we have that's unique to us and is award-winning, I say with humility and pride.
Well, that also brings up the point that there have been many developments historically here in town that even through the planning process and construction even, had gotten tons of community pushback. I'm thinking, you remember, Cynthia, in the Good Bread area over on off of North Macomb Street in Frenchtown. And not the 1010 North Macomb was ever anyone's idea of paradise. That was a really ratty development. But when that was being redeveloped, some people said, no, 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 we don't want to go there. The Blairstone Road extension. Oh, my God, it was going to kill all the trees and the animals and everything else. And now people are going, oh, my God, this is wonderful. This is great. Lindsay, when you guys were working on the Cascades Park development, people were saying, keep the old jail, do this, do that, don't do a high rise, do this, save the trees. And so you had to adjust your plans based on at least some of that input, right?
Oh, we sure did. And we formed an historical user group that was made up of citizens and stakeholders in the community. We, through their input and through the multiple meetings that we had, we determined that we wanted to preserve the WPA building, which was the first public health unit in the city. It basically forms a historic district in that area. If you take that into account, and then the historical plaza, which we already have planned to put in our development, and then across the street, the waterworks, which was the first public water for the city. The Carolyn Brevard School on the other corner, which is the first school in Tallahassee. And we already have seen the revitalization of the power plant across the way at the Edison. So we really feel like we took the input and we'll continue to seek the input from the user group and the community as we design the historical plaza that designs probably, you know, good 12 months out because of just the sequencing of our construction. But we fully intend to keep engaging the community and, you know, love to be invited to things like this so we can talk more about it and kind of communicate what maybe our misconceptions out there about our development and our intentions. So,
well, Gil Penaloso, you have been through this with multiple communities. Are these guys doing it right? Do you have any additional helpful hints or advice for them as they go through this reimagining process here?
Well, I do think that there's lots and lots of things that are being done that is right. I think that the college town, I think having higher density, for example, some people say, oh, please don't take out any trees. Ideally, we should not take out any trees. But there is nothing more environmental than doing development like College Town. Imagine that all of those hundreds of condos in College Town, that they were single homes in the outside of Tallahassee. All of those people commuting in and out every day, polluting the air, making noise. And it would be not sustainable from the point of view of environmentally, financially, in any way. So they would have to take down many, many more trips if there were single homes in the outskirts. So I think those are really, really good. I think the important thing is also to realize that Tallahassee is good, but it's far from great. So the fact that lots of good things are happening, please do not become complacent. Do not develop a myth of excellence. And also be bold, be ambitious. I think that Tallahassee, if you want to compare yourself with cities that are worse than Tallahassee, in 10 minutes you can do a list of 500 cities. But if you compare yourself with cities that are worse, eventually you're going to look like those. Now, you need to look at cities that are similar in size, in income, like Boulder, Colorado, like Davis, California, like Owens in Denmark or Victoria in BC or whatever, city, and say, okay, the best cities in the world of similar size, which one has the highest level of happiness, mental health, physical health, climate change resilience, and be as good as them. So I think you got magnificent universities. You have so many good infrastructure from the government. I mean, if a Martian came down here, maybe they would have thought that you were kind of a socialist as Sweden. Almost all of the major employers in Tallahassee are public sector. But take advantage of that. You got the state, you got the city, the county, you got all of these great universities, but also you have a very vibrant private sector. But you need to work together. This has to be an alliance of the elected officials, the public sector staff, but not just the planners, but also public health, education, finance, and the citizens. This is not a time for citizens to be spectators. Citizens need to participate. Call up the radio stations, go to the public meetings, write up to the local media. And together, you are going to develop a shared vision, but vision alone, it doesn't work. You need to share vision and action. And if you have a shared vision and action, you can create a Tallahassee that is vibrant and that it has with healthy neighborhoods where people are going to live happier.
And you also have to vote, and that's coming up here on November 6th. That is very important, too.
Elections matter, right?
Lindsay, you wanted to jump in there.
Yes, yes. I had the opportunity to see Gil speak Monday night, and he did such a wonderful job presenting the concept of 8 and 80. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, Gil, just to, because you did such a good job when you spoke about it before, how do you see the programming and consistency of the programming being a really big component of activating these spaces? Like you mentioned, opening up or closing the streets down and opening them for bicycles and pedestrians on, Sundays. And
oh, this is very important, because I think that one of the biggest problems with the parks and other public places in America is lack of management. We think that management is synonymous of maintenance. No, maintenance, picking up the garbage and cutting the grass might be 20% of management. No, management is how they develop uses and activities on the weekdays, on the weekend, in the summer, in the winter. Management is engaging the community. What is it that they want before, during, after? Management is finding the resources. And like uses and activities is absolutely critical. It's not just doing a trail. We need to have walking groups. For example, the issue of loneliness. Loneliness is very, very important. It's a huge crisis. So much that in the UK, they created the Ministry of Loneliness 6 months ago. And we see people walking in Cascade Park, but we don't see the people that are not walking. So maybe we should have walking groups Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays at 10 a.m. We need to have knitting groups. It's not about knitting. People could be knitting at home. They go is because they need to socialize. We need to have yoga in the park. We need to have all kinds of the uses of the streets, like you mentioned. When one-third of Tallahassee are streets, and the streets are our biggest public space, we should be able to do other things with streets. We should be more flexible and at some points open the streets to people, close them to cars, and do all kinds of activities. So I think that investing, all of a sudden, when we do four walls and we put a roof and we call it community center, we say, oh, we need a director, we need yoga, we need Tai Chi with this. But when we do a park, we think that is going to take care of itself. No, it doesn't. Parks need almost as much management as the community centers. We should look at parks and public spaces almost like an outdoor community center where you need to engage the faith groups, the schools, the community groups. Otherwise, they're not going to click. I see that it seems easier in cities to find the millions to do the parks than to find the thousands to make them work. You say, oh, let's do a movie in the park. We don't have money. Oh, Halloween is coming up. Let's do pumpkin. No, we don't have money. Oh, let's do this walking. We don't have money. No, you need to find money for the uses and activities. Otherwise, you need to have the hardware and the software. Part of it is infrastructure, but also part of it is programs.
Yeah, and so much of the criticism of the Leon County School District has been, okay, the kids are gone, the teachers are gone, shut the place down. It becomes essentially an isolated, abandoned space until the kids come back to school the next morning, whereas kids used to go to school playgrounds.
Right.
But now because of liability and all that kind of thing, they're not open all the
time. Liability is an easy excuse. The reality is that there are many, many schools across Florida that are open. So because the easiest thing to do, oh, it's liability. No, we need to have leaders that are looking for solutions to the problems, not for problems to the solution. It's not sustainable that all of the people in Tallahassee, through their taxes, have built these fantastic schools that are open only from 7 to 4. No, you need to create those schools and make them school parks. They need to be community hubs that after 4 p.m., Saturdays, Sundays, or over the summer, they're open to the community. That is, we talk about sustainability, but then we don't do those things. Part of being sustainable is having a much better link between the schools and the parks and the streets and the libraries, everything that is public, everything that belongs to everyone in Tallahassee.
Yeah, and every neighborhood in town, Christine Henry, has a school.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And I just want to speak to, first of all, I really enjoyed your presentation. I really enjoyed the soul that you presented in the presentation. You really brought it back to the soul of a community, which are its people. And our city does an excellent job in engaging people. We can do better with formalizing that process and making sure that people are engaged and they are informed.
I think, I was just going to piggyback as well. I think the challenge that you present to us of learning from the best, you know, acknowledge that we are good. We have gone from good to great, maybe. But what is it going to become exceptional? Exceptional for our citizens, et cetera. And I would just offer that we absolutely do that. You know, we traveled to Boulder, as you said. We came back with ideas, and we activated an entrepreneurial ecosystem, and we're focusing on our magnetic capabilities like never before. We went to Nashville, and we focus on our infrastructure. I'll talk about trees later, but we are the most canopied city of our size in the United States, and we seek to only embellish that further. So we hear you.
Ben Pingree, Christy Henry, Cynthia Barber, Lindsay McGrow, and of course, our delighted friend, Gil Penaloso. Thank you so much for being on Perspectives today and talking about the 880 situation and hope for the future here. Speaking of future, elections do have consequences. We'll be going into our political perspectives mode. As of next Tuesday, we'll be covering the Leon County School Board races as well as City and County Commission. We hope you can join us then right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.